why don't you tell us something about what you think the lasting contributions of the Stanford AI Lab are? What are the most significant things done there?
Well, that's a hard question. One of the things that I wanted to do when I established that lab was to justify having what was in those days a large computer. And the other thing that I thought was how vision should be done, and that vision should be done as an aid to being able to manipulate things. So we built a hand-eye system, and we were about the first to do that with a computer. There's my own work, which has to do with common sense expressed in languages of mathematical logic.
In 1962, you came out to California, and I think it could be argued that your arrival in the Bay Area has had as much importance for the establishment of Silicon Valley as the somewhat more celebrated arrival of Shockley or the return of Hewlett and Packard. Can you tell us something about why you chose to come out to Stanford in 1962 and what it was like when you arrived?
I think that exaggerates my importance quite a lot. But I was very surprised when George Forsythe, who was planning to have a computer science department, called me up at MIT and asked me if I would come out to Stanford. And because I'd been at Stanford before, and because they had decided to keep two of their acting assistant professors and I was the third, when he called me up, I said, I'd only come as a full professor. And I thought that would turn him off since I was just an associate professor at MIT. But he said, I think I can arrange that. And he did, but though it apparently took him quite a bit of trouble. I came to Stanford also because I was involved in a squabble at MIT.
Was Stanford and the Bay Area in general, were they centers of computer science at the time that you arrived?
I'd have to say that there were no centers of computer science at that time in 62, although I would say that MIT was more advanced in computers than almost anybody else.
Was there actually a Department of Computer Science and a degree program in computer science when you arrived at Stanford?
Oh, no. I was hired in the anticipation that there would be a Department of Computer Science, and so for the first 3 years I was in the mathematics department.
A lot of what John Markoff writes about and what the Dormouse said is the desire of people to have their own computer and control their own computer. You predicted in 1970 that people would have home computers, each consisting of a typewriter keyboard and a screen capable of displaying one or more pages of print and pictures. Why do you think it took so long for systems like that to appear?
It didn't take long. They appeared on a small scale right away, but they weren't computers. It wasn't possible to make a computer that such that an individual could have it. They were just computer terminals connected by telephone to larger timeshared computers.
When did you first have computer access from your own home, and what did you use it for?
I was one of the inventors of the idea of timesharing when I was at MIT that would permit one computer to serve a lot of people. So I was very eager that when I came to Stanford that I would be one of the first to have a computer terminal at home. And it seems to me that I had that about 1967.
That's remarkable. What kind of bitrate connection did you have, and what did you use your computer for? Did you mostly use it for email from at home, even at that time?
At that time, in 67, there wasn't any email, so I used it for two purposes. One was for writing articles online, and the other was actually for writing and running computer programs.
How long did it take a character to echo back after you typed it in 1967?
Oh, that was quick enough. What we used was a Model 35 teletype, and that connection was quick enough. But if you wanted to have the computer actually do anything with what you typed, that was what might take quite a bit of time, because quite a number of people would be using the computer at the same time.
One thing that the personal computer users of today may have trouble imagining is that when you were using a timeshare system, someone else would start a gigantic job and grab all the resources, and what you were doing would slow down. That's something today people have no experience of.
Well, they wouldn't be able to grab all the resources because the timesharing system was arranged so that nobody could have more than 30 milliseconds at a time. So if you had a long job, it would cycle among your job and other people's jobs. But nevertheless, if there were several people doing heavy computation, then it would slow down for everybody.
One amusing anecdote in what the Dormouse said is about people playing Stephen Russell's Space War game and how SAIL made special provision for people to get enough cycles to have a good video game playing experience.
I'm not sure about that. He probably would have heard it from somebody else. I would have felt, since I was the boss of the lab and was a research lab, that I wouldn't necessarily have approved of that. But we did have Space War on that machine, although Steve Russell had originally designed it for a smaller machine, the PDP-1 computer.
I gather that Steve Russell was your student and that Space War was, in fact, the first ever computer game.
I'm not certain about that. That may be correct. Russell was a student at Dartmouth when I was on the faculty there, and then he came to work for me as a programmer at MIT, and then later he came out to Stanford, worked for me for a while.
It does seem like the playing of games has an important role in the history of computing. The Computer History Museum right now has an exhibit about computer chess, and what the Dormouse said relates the story of your groups playing a game of chess against a team in the Soviet Union. In those days it was by correspondence, but it was still computer chess, I guess.
Yes, and it used the older computer, the IBM 7090, using a program that I had started and had been finished by some MIT students before I left MIT.
Sometimes it seems, if you study the history of technology, that a lot of the important innovations have been made by people who were playing with the technology rather than people who set out to do tasks which was more academically impressive or important.
Both were important, but one of the things that I would say is nothing that I ever did that I got credit for was done because some committee had decided that that was a good thing to work in. Today, there are too many committees.
Certainly no one disagrees with that. Among the famous events related in the book is a little bit of the history of the Homebrew Computer Club, which is most famous for being the place where Wozniak and Jobs first introduced the Apple I. You had actually some interaction with the Homebrew Computer Club, which met briefly at the Stanford AI Lab.
I didn't have very much technical interaction with them. I was busy with other things, but I certainly approved of what they were doing and was glad to have them meet at the AI Lab.